So, not related to the lessons from the late extended edition, which Shemir Tishon will be out soon. Someone asked me a question that really bothered them. He said an experience that they saw on Shabbos in Hebron. And the core of his question was, how come there appears to be a separate set of rules for certain types of people? When you move to Eretz Yisrael, Eretz Yisrael Niknes B'Assurim tells us the Gemara that Eretz Yisrael is bought, is known to be not the easiest place to live. The Ribbono Shel Olam promised us that he would do this so that everybody doesn't have this chus of living here. And there's a Yetzahara that reminds us that all the time. That's why people are stuck in America and in other countries, because it's not easy to live in Eretz Yisrael. Nobody lives here and says, wow, you know, I'm going to move here for the gashmius, right? For the comfort, the plasticware that's going up by 50%, you know? The gas that just went up like crazy. Nobody moves here for that. But we also don't move here, excuse me for saying the term, for the Israelis. A friend of mine said, who lives in a town in America, and they have another four towns attached to it, and he said, you know, I would move to Israel in a second if the Israelis moved out. And there's emes to it. I had the schuss of picking up a car this week. And I was dying to say something which my wife wouldn't let me say. I purchased a car for a lot of money. The customer service was, as we say in Hebrew, al hapanim. You're horrible people. The guy called me and said, your car's ready. If I don't get the money in 3 days, I'm giving it to somebody else. I'm like, wow, you're a good salesman. I spent many years doing sales, so I know sales. Like, I laugh at them. That's their thing, right? You go into a store and you guys like, so I wonder if I can have a discount. Is a discount? You want a discount? Get out of my store! Don't ever come back. Like, that's sales, you know? But more than that, on a more of a religious level, how do certain Jews act in a certain way? So this person was in Hebron and said that it was pushing and shoving, and the police, nobody listened to rules. Even on a smaller level, just give you the, last week I had this chus on Thursday, was my son's Masa Kumta, right? It's like graduation ceremony. It was amazing. The worst part of it was waking up at 2:30 in the morning. The worst part of it is getting there, Baruch Hashem, on time. And the worst part of it is that you have to walk the last kilometer with your son, right? That's obviously the worst part of it.
Why is it hard for you?
Right? Very, very, very hard. And it wasn't walk. It was like a little bit of a run.
It's impressive.
But here, wait, it's worse, guys. Listen to this. You get there. It's obviously the middle of the night, right? 4:30 in the morning. You can't. And they say to you that you park your car. And they say, no, go here. You have to walk now. So that's 2 kilometers. So you have to walk a kilometer to meet them. So we get to the place. There's an army jeep with lights and people with M16s. You're not going anywhere. You're not passing that. And all of a sudden, we're there way early. They told us the guys aren't coming for another 40 minutes. My son didn't come for another hour and something. And the parents are like itching forward a little bit. And the soldiers are like, you can't. And all of a sudden, you hear one Israeli go, you know, in Hebrew, like, yala, let's go. And they start running. And the soldiers are trying to catch up with them. And they end up going past where they're supposed to go. And instead of walking back a kilometer, we all now have to walk back 3 kilometers because these amazing people decided that they want to break the rules and they're going to go, they want to be able to see their kids quicker. This makes absolutely no mathematical sense, no sense in any shape. But this is the Israeli mentality. But when it comes to Avodas Hashem, sometimes we have an issue with that. How is it that sometimes we see the people that look the most religious are doing the things that are the worst? This happens especially when we're on a plane. Everybody knows probably already my joke that I do not fly El Al. But this part of the thing I never told you. This summer, I received a call, I'm not exaggerating a little bit, from the CEO of El Al America, Yoram something. And he said, Daniel, your brother-in-law, we do business together. How come you don't fly with El Al? He found out that I'm flying almost, you know, every month, every 6 weeks. I'm a good frequent flyer. He wants me on the team, you know? This is the CEO calling me. Why would he be calling me? So, besides being a horrible salesperson and saying to me, I'll give you exactly what United gives you if you join El Al. I'm like, okay, so why would I want to join you? But he said to me, why don't you fly Allah? So I said, I can say it in one word. Yehudim, Jews. Are you not Jewish? He goes, no, I'm Jewish. I don't want to fly with other Jews. It's terrible. Even on United, it's terrible. I'm sorry to say what I'm about to say. It's really offensive. When I fly now, I wear a hat. I'm embarrassed. I don't want to be asked about Mincha and Ma'ariv. I don't want to be asked of this kosher, this that. I don't want to be told anything. Let me do my own thing. And I feel like, and I'm sorry to say this, I'm treated differently on the flight now because they don't know that I'm from, except obviously when they give me the kosher meal, they get mad at me because I never take the food. Like, I don't want the meals. I should just get the non-kosher food and say I don't want it. Maybe some of it. But what goes on planes? I flew back on what's called an emergency flight. Unfortunately, it was El Al. And we went on that flight during COVID. The flight after me had 7 people who were positive with COVID who had fake PCR tests. The captain got on and said, I don't have a lot of rules for this flight, but you need to wear a mask the whole flight. And you cannot daven in the galley like you normally do. And the moment he finished, a guy got up and said, Maidiv, let's go.
It's a challenge.
What's going on? That's what I want to speak about today. So this week I spoke with the guys, something you should have remembered from last year, about changing your seats on the El Al flight. And I told a tremendous story of Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. Such a beautiful story. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach was one of the greatest gedolim in Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh. I had the schus of meeting him. He was one of my Rebbeim's Rebbe, Rav Goldwich's Rebbe. So warm. He's known to be just a tzaddik. So he would go onto the bus from his home in Shari Chesed and go to TV. He gave a shir in Beit Vagan. So when he was on the bus, the first seat was reserved for a Shlomo Zalman, and nobody would sit next to him. Nobody, not man or woman. Why? So you know that guy that gets on the phone. Oh my God, Shlomo Zalman's here. I could ask him all the questions I've ever had. Hey, Rabbi! What's the story with Wrigley Spearmint gum in America? Is that really kosher? I'm like, well, you ask him a Shlomo Zalman. Let him come in. And this woman gets on, and she sits down next to him. And you could hear the bus go, you know. And the bus driver's about to turn around and say, get out of the seat. And Rav Shlomo Zalman motions to her and says, don't say anything. The next stop, Rav Shlomo Zalman gets up, and he looks at her and he says, it was a pleasure riding with you. Have a nice day. And gets off the bus. And everybody on the bus who knows Rav Shlomo knows exactly what just happened. Rav Shlomo Zalman got off miles before his stop. He didn't want to embarrass her, but he didn't want to sit next to her either. So he decided to walk the rest of the way. Why is this such a great story? Because it's the story about how life should be. What a walking Kiddush Hashem is. She doesn't know anything. She doesn't know the story happened. But a Jew goes out of his way to not make people feel uncomfortable. But yes, Rabbi Isai, there are certain times where I cannot and will not negotiate. Right? Especially if I'm after sheer bed and a girl comes up to me to give me a hug. I'm sorry, guys. You have to embarrass her. You have to. Maybe not for a handshake, as we discussed last year. Maybe we have different heterim that we gave. Especially, famously, Rav Chaim Berlin, the Nishmas Chaim's idea that the goyim are going to call us mishugoyim. They're not going to understand what's a mere handshake. But obviously, there are other things that we do hold the line. I don't think I told you this story. I think I told the other guys. Just stop me if I told you this story. I had an amazing conversation 2 Shabbos ago. Not the Shabbos, last Shabbos, when I was on my trip. From our hotel to the Old City with a Chiloni guy. I hate that term, but whatever. Not religious guy, who came on the trip to try to inspire other people, showing what Israel is. V'chulu v'chulu. He's a really wonderful person. And he says to me, Daniel, you know, I like you. He doesn't know I'm a rabbi. He doesn't know anything about me. And he says, I want to tell you why I'm not religious. I'm like, oh God, here we go. And I'm not equipped for this. I'm not a Q. I'm like, oh God. He says to me, I'm including myself in this. He says, we don't act well. Israelis are the worst. There are certain hotels now in Dubai that don't allow Israelis to check in anymore because of how they treat the hotel. Not because they're Jews, by the way. Jews can come in, just not Israeli. So he's only talking about religion. And then religiously starts going on about religious people and how they act. And he says, this is the Am HaNivchar. I think we were the Am HaNivchar. Come on, Hassan, that's what he thinks. Because I think we're slightly better than that. So first of all, I gave him a few examples. I said, and he admitted I was correct in what I was saying. We only hear negative press, right? We obviously, sensational stories are what makes the news, right? Ramat Beit Shemesh Bet is only going to be in the news for the 8 people who come out and burn garbages because the internet's awesome. I don't know, whatever. And I told him, the amount of good that they do often outweighs that. If you look at almost all the chesed organizations in Eretz Yisrael, many, many of them are run by Haredi Jews. Right? It's not obvious that a non-government organization that deals with Tahara, with Kedusha, with bodies, is run by Haredi. One could argue that even, you know, the concept of Ichud Hatzalah, right? Mr. Beer, he's a religious Jew at least, maybe he's somewhat Haredi. But there's so many of those organizations out there. So much. The organ donation organization, the Ezra Merape, there's so many things, I don't want to get into it. They do such good. I said, guess what? That's not Israel, it's in America. The top, that's not a joke, the top chesed organizations are run by Haredi. Satmar Biko Cholim. It's unbelievable what they do. I remember my grandmother when she was in the hospital, what they did for her. Bring hot soup. They didn't say to her, wait, do you cover your hair or not? Is for a minute? No. We know the story that during COVID, the number one donors of plasma, not to help fellow Jews, just to help people, were Hasidic Jews. 100%. Not fake news. I said, so let's look at some of the positives. And there are a lot of negatives out there. I said to them, you know what the difference is? I once had a cab driver. You know, cab drivers in Israel, like, you could write svarim about each cab driver because they're like, Musr, they tell you Musr, they listen. Especially like, they know so much more than you do. You mean me as well. And they'll be like, Todea, Katub b'chabakuk. Like, chabak what? Right? So this guy was bemoaning me. I was very upset. He was laying it on me about the Haredim in bed. You know, I drive them sometimes. You don't even know the places I drive them. You would be shocked where they go sometimes at night. So I said to him, you know, I got to tell you something. When everybody sitting around here wants to do something bad, you know what we do? We just take our yarmulkes off. I'm sorry, but every single person here looks like a goy. Especially blue eyes. Right? No, we're dressed like, it's not a bad thing. Right? It's Calvin Klein. I mean, come on. Right? Tommy Hilfiger, this one, you know, of all people, Tommy Hilfiger. This one's dressed this, that. That's fine. But we can walk into a bar and people can be like, I can't believe a firm person's in there, but they don't know who you are. A Hasidic guy that puts on a Mets hat and thinks that nobody's going to know who he is. We know who he is. So I said to them, these people are not real Hasidim. They're in a bad situation because they can't every night take their payas off and look like they can and shave their beard. But they're not real. This week it happened. I have dining room chairs we've had for probably 13 years. Oh, no, sorry, 10 years. And some of the chairs are breaking. So I went to a chair fixer guy who happens to be in bed. I didn't know what I was getting involved in. I was a little nervous. Nicest guy in the world. Nicest guy. Haredi looking a bit, but not Hasidic. I got to ask you a question. How the heck did you get here? What are you doing in the middle of bed, man? Says to me, it's a great story. He says, I call it the 15,000 shekel story. He says, I couldn't afford a house in Ramat Beit Shemesh. It was 15,000 shekel more. I didn't have any money. I have Baruch Hashem, I think I had 8 kids, 11 kids, something like that. 11, I think he said. So I bought a house here, and they were honest with me. They told me it was going to be Haredi. I said, who cares? Live and let live. He says, I have to tell you something. These are the nicest people. goes, I daven in the shul, it's called the Purushim. Purushim from the word that parish themselves. They're like, they say Hasidim are not firm enough on it. They're the religious or the most religious. He goes, they treat me like a $1 million. They call me the little guy, not because I'm short, which he is. He says, because I'm the only one there who doesn't wear a bekasha. And I wear a suit, what they call a short suit. They're the nicest. But you know why? Because I respect them. I wouldn't bring my wife, I wouldn't invite them for a meal because they're not going to eat my food. They're not going to marry my daughters. I respect that. And I'm sneers. Okay, it's extreme, yeah. They're not going to go out running because they don't believe you can wear goyish clothes like, you know, shorts and a t-shirt to go running, and they're not going to go running in their you know, bekishas and strangles. You know what? Okay. But he said there's a respect level because you don't know the goodness that they do here. He goes, yes, and there are some crazy ones. Yes. Down the block, this one. Okay, but we know they're crazy. And maybe we should speak up a little bit more. You're right. Okay. I think we unfortunately live with the media. And we get this idea, and we have stories. Don't get me wrong. We have stories of, oh my God, this happened. Rabbi, I have to tell you something very sad. I'm in an industry now that is all Jewish religious based. Almost all my vendors are either religious or Hasidic. And I have a lot of questions about how a lot of them act. And a lot of the tricks, what they call tricks of the trade, which I call, you know, tricks to get you to Gehenna. But they do. It hurts me. I can't explain it to you. But I know in the core that there are a lot of them that are amazing, that are good. And don't want to do shtick. And don't believe it's a mitzvah to steal from the government. And don't believe we have different rules than everybody else, and therefore we're going to do whatever we want. Ha ha. And all those Israelis, by the way, that broke the line and walked another 3 kilometers, they weren't Hasidic Jews. So it's something we have to work on. But for ourselves, we have to look at ourselves. And let's look at our own core of who we are. We don't have bad people in it. I'll tell you a great story. This should go on Y-Tor just for this story. Because it's a name drop story, so it's good. I once did something that's not like me, although you think it's like me, but it's not like me. On our block, we have Omer Yankel Lovers, the former minister of diaspora. Chashuv. You okay? So, she's very close with Benny Gantz. She's Benny Gantz's party. And one of the first times when she was, you know, started the Knesset, Benny Gantz comes. This is the time that Benny Gantz is now, this is when he was supposed to be the Prime Minister of Israel. So, obviously we know he comes. He's got, wee, wee, but all this time, whatever. This time he came, unfortunately, but it was on Shabbos, so it was a little bit more quiet. And I happened to be at my neighbor's house, whose house is attached to them. And the wife is like, I'm really sorry you have to leave the table. I'm going somewhere. I can't tell you. I'm like, I know where you're going. I know what's going on. So I said, I'll be a loser and knock on the door and see if they'll let me in. And they were like, of course, what are they going to do? Kick me out? I'm like, sure, come in. Ah. So Benny Gantz is sitting there. And at that moment, Rav Flittenstein, the great tzaddik, Rav Flittenstein from the shul here, the Shtibel of Yisrael, is there with his shtreimel and bekasha and giving him a bracha and telling him it was just the end. This was a few years ago, but just the end of Sukkot. And he spoke about the concept of a guda achas. He said, I know you're forming a government now. You need achas. People thought he was going to be the Prime Minister of Israel. We need achas. Please. He says, I'm Hasidish. I want to be part of you. But we have to work together. And it was beautiful what he said. And when he walked out, Benny Gantz showed us his real... He says, excuse me what he said. But am I not mistaken that a few kilometers from here is where David fought Goliath? David wasn't from. He served in the army. He went on this whole rampage of the army. And then he started to go off on Hasidim. And he said, you know, when I go to the Kotel, I don't know when he goes to the Kotel, but when he goes to the Kotel, I always like to take a Rinat Yisrael Siddur, because that's my Siddur. It's a Siddur of the religious Zionists. And always when I open it up, I check for the tefillah from the Medina. And it's not there because some Hasidish person ripped it out. And I'm incensed now. And I'm saying to myself, Daniel, don't speak. Daniel, don't speak. Daniel, don't speak. Daniel speaks. I said, with all due respect, can I tell you something? And he offended me because he's like, do me a favor, speak in English, please. You know, I'm like, and who said I give the chamashu? He's like, just speak in English. There was a few people at the table that didn't understand Hebrew. So, okay. I'm going back to Rosh Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. I said, did you ever hear Rosh Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, who that was? He said, Ken Bevadai. I'm not sure if he did or not. I'm not sure. Bevadai. I said, I want to tell you a story about Rosh Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, and I want to tell you what real charedim are. The famous story, and I corroborated the story was true, somebody who went to Kol Torah. So it's a true story. A bunch of Bachrim needed inspiration. So they wanted to go up to Tveria, to Miron, to the Tzadikim, daven by them. And they went to Rosh Shlomo Zalman because they didn't want to get in trouble. I said, listen, we're not going to be in Shir on Thursday. We want to ask Mechila and your permission. We need inspiration. We want to daven by the Tzadikim. Shlomo Zalman says, what are you wasting your time for? You want to daven by the Tzadikim? Go a few blocks away to Har Herzl. Those are the modern day Tzadikim. I told him the story. And he gave me, vada. The people who ripped out the tefillah from the Medina are nut jobs. I go, tagidi mashu. In your group, what do you call your group? Chilonim? The Chilonim, there's nobody that goes to jail? When Charedim go to jail, you know about it because they look the way they look. The majority of people that do things that are bad are not religious Jews, obviously. They're not religious Jews because they're a much higher population. So now I'm going to say, I don't want to be Chilonim. I have to be religious because there are so many people who are doing them. We all do. But why are you blaming certain? At the core, they're good people. He very much dismissed everything I had to say. But I felt so good about myself that I said it. And afterwards, I got a few people said to me, wow, I can't believe you said that to Benny Gantt. And he's come a gazillion times after that, and I've not ever been invited again. But sometimes the media gets me. And sometimes I get on that side and I want to join the side of, oh, they're terrible. These people are terrible. And I say, wait, look at my own people. Are we so good? We're not pushy and shoving people. It's not all of them. And yes, I'm going to say something funny. Some of them are Tinok Shanishma. We call Tinok Shanishma someone who's not religious. Right? You wouldn't go up on my trip. Imagine if I went up to a guy and I go up to him. There was a guy that was videoing Friday night Kabbalah Shabbos at the hotel. Right? Way past Shkia and Tzeitz HaKocha. The guy had absolutely, positively no idea what he was doing was wrong. So should I pick up his phone and throw it against the wall and say, what are you doing, you guy? He doesn't know what he's doing. Now, maybe I should politely say to him, you're about to get attacked by some people who are going to kill you for videoing, which maybe... I would never say anything. Why? He never learned. He has no idea. If I started, he wouldn't even know what I was talking about. So people who don't have good manners or warm broth, so maybe yes. I don't blame them though. We also have our issues. We also, with our own, let's look at ourselves and say, yes, we should do things differently. I tell the story, I was on a flight a few years ago. I'll never forget this story. And I was in the bulkhead seat, and next to me was an empty seat, and next to me was a Belzer Chassid from Bnei Brak. Wonderful, wonderful guy. And we started talking. He told me he's from Bnei Brak. I don't know why. I said, you know Rav Zilberstein? It was Rav Zilberstein. He take that as safer. We start talking about Rav Zilberstein. He's like a little shocked the way I look. I think it was, I wasn't wearing my hat in those days. I only wear a hat on the flight now. But and then people start passing. Now, I don't know about you, but I fly a lot. I say Tehillim when the people pass. So because I want an empty seat. I'm down with the Rosh Hashanah for an empty seat. And then the 300-pound person starts passing you, and you're like Mizmor LeDavid Hashem Lo Yilei Rechsar Gam Ki Eilech Begeit Salmoves, because I know if he sits next to me, I'm going to die. And he passes you, and you say thank you, Hashem. And then he turns around, and he says, "Where's 22A? No." And this woman comes, and I'm 100% sure she's sitting next to us. She was a very, very poor woman, Nebuch, because clearly she was only able to afford half of her clothes. And she sits next to us. And the moment she does, she looks at the Hasidish guy and she says to him, "Oh, Yeshanu Bayapo, we have a problem." And he looks at her like she was a man and says, "No. Is this your seat? Yeah, so sit there." Now I'm like, I have a problem. My wife's going to kill me if I sit next to you. I didn't say anything. And literally a moment later, a beeline, one of the flight attendants says, "Okay, sir, should we switch seats?" And he's like, "No, I don't. What's the problem?" As if the guy was wearing a Yankees hat and wearing, you know, a polo shirt. They're like, it's like, what's the problem? And then 5 minutes later, she sits down. She puts all. He doesn't say a word. The head flight attendant comes. How you know it's the head? She got stripes. You know, she's important. They think they take. The guy's called a captain who flies the plane. So they take it like they're you know, I'm a sergeant. You know, I'm a flight attendant. Fine. And she says, she looks at the chassid and she says to him, "Sir, thank you very much for handling this the way it should be handled. We know it's not comfortable for you to sit next to a woman. We got another seat for her. And because of that, sir, you're a zeiche, you know, you're going to have an empty seat for the whole flight. Thank you, sir." And she leaves. And I look at him and I say to him, "Wow. You are a walking Kiddush Hashem." Because people saw this on the flight. This is the way you handle it. Now, it doesn't even have to be like that. You could call the flight and excuse me, if it's possible, if there's any other extra seats, and I'll move if I need to. Is there any way? Maybe. He didn't say anything. I said, "You're a walking Kiddush Hashem." And the Rabbanu Shalom rewarded you that you have an empty seat next to you for the whole flight.
You go into.
So he says, "Can I ask you a question?" I go, "Sure. How come you're a zoichet to an empty seat next to you too?" So I got mad at him and I put my TV out, and then he stopped talking to me the whole flight. It's like, how can I watch TV? But at the essence, we have to be a little bit mawachar. I had this little game that I played, I think it was my year after Israel. Anytime I would see a gadol, the question I would ask them was, is it appropriate to be more machmir, to be Mekadosh Hashem? There's such Chil Hashem in the world, right? It's interesting because many of the gedolim didn't agree with my approach. They said, "No, you have to do what you have to do. I don't have to be overly." So you have an example where we know the Tos Akum, you don't have to return money if a goy made a mistake. Different important reasons, not for now. But Shulchan Aruch in the same line says, but if you can create a Kiddush Hashem, you should return the money. So here I am creating the Kiddush Hashem, and I return the money. And the lady turns around to me and she says, "Ugh, you Jews are all the same. All you want is money." I'm like, "No, you don't understand. I'm returning the money to you. Should I be machmir and say, bring the manager out? I want to do a Kiddush Hashem." I don't know. Because I'm from, do I overly have to, you know, keep the door open for every single person? So, because maybe when the door closes, they'll be like, "Oh, this Jew didn't open the door for me. I opened the door for, I've been there for 5 minutes opening the door for everyone." Maybe the answer is yes. You know, the message of Akedas Yitzchak may be surprising to you, but it's an obvious message. It's obvious. I think Rabbi Tarragon, Rabbi Moshe Tarragon said this. The message of Akedas Yitzchak is, I actually said this, my son's, last Thursday, Masa Kumta, I said this on Lessons from the Lathe, because I think it's the core. I look at my son's pluga as, obviously we all think we're perfect, right? As the perfect Jew. Because they're called Benishim, the guys that are in Hester Yeshiva, like you guys are in Hester now. And they've made a deal with the government, basically. Not my son, but years ago. And saying, "Listen, we're religious Jews, and we want you to respect that we're religious. And we ask certain dispensations. Number one, we're not going to go to the army right away. We want to learn Torah a little bit, a year and a half. And when we go to the army, you got to be respectful. We have to daven 3 times a day, kosher food. You know. And in general, the army is very respectful of this. And they do the same exact things that all the regular soldiers do. The 50-kilometer hike, which was 60, really. But here's what happens at the end. At the end of it, when everybody has an hour and 1.5 hours, and my son's was the last because they said that they were the strongest, so they wanted to put them at the end. The first ones are always the guys that are in special ops. And they say, you were putting you at the end because you guys will hold the group together and make them go faster. So now, the actual ceremony is in an hour. And all these, Rabbi Yisai, 60 kilometers, they're dying. My son has this huge machine gun. Well, dive in another time. Come on. And there are tables out. Everybody's giving out food, and there's trucks that are giving out food, you know, different organizations. And we go to Daven. Now, I was okay at Daven because I didn't do anything. I know I walked 3 kilometers. Okay, just go ahead. And they finished Davening. It was Thursday, so there was Kriyas HaTorah. And they had 7 minutes to eat. So annoying. We made pizza. It was amazing. I don't know how this is possible in Israel. They called up a pizza place and did a deal with them. Can you open at 5 in the morning and make us fresh pizzas? So we'll pay whatever it costs. And they came. That's what it's a frum Jew is. Wow. Davening's more important. What a Kiddush Hashem. So what did I say then? What I'll say now. The essence of a Kedis Yitzchak was not what you thought it was. We have to die al Kiddush Hashem. That's what Yitzchak did. No, he didn't. No, he didn't. He agreed that he would, but it taught us a lesson that that's not the ultimate. The ultimate is not dying al Kiddush Hashem. You know what the ultimate is, Rabbi Yisai? Living al Kiddush Hashem. I'm not saying anything negative about the great Kedoshim who died al Kiddush Hashem. But in its essence, it's one act. Living is an everyday thing, a constant struggle to do the Rasan of Hashem. That's what the Akedah is. That's the true sacrifice of life. It's saying, wow, I got to act different. I don't want to act different. I just told you this. I look the same as they do. You're going to go into the work world. Please get off your phones or leave the class. It's fine. You don't have to be it. I don't get paid. At the core of who we are is all challenged because you made a decision. Mommy didn't make a decision. Your parents made a decision. I used to have a Rebbe who used to say when we asked him hard questions, I said, well, why do we have to do this? Why do we do that? He goes, your stupid mother, my stupid mother. What did that mean? It means because you're Jewish, that's why you have to do it. It's a nice answer, but that's not the real answer. Let's say you're happy with who you are now. You should never be happy with who you are. But let's say, and I want to be modern Russian, and you want to dress the way you're dressed. And now you're going to go into the work world. And nobody sees a difference between you and who you are. But then the first day, they're like, hey, what's going on, cool guy? You're cool. You just have one of those beanie caps. I don't care. You got to protect your horns. I get it. Do you want to go out to the bar? We're going out clubbing. We're going to a bar. You know what that means. You know what's happening. Are you going to be able to say, well, actually, I'm married, and that's not who I am. I'm an Orthodox Jew. I can't. Just like on Friday at 4:12. Yeah, we changed the clock. Friday at 2-something, you'd be like, I got to go. What do you mean you have to go? It's the middle of the day. Literally the middle of the day. You can't leave now. I have to. Okay, you know what? Next week, you'll do 2 Shabbos. Do Friday and that. You need this Shabbos. You can't miss a Shabbos. And they get it. That's an Akedah Yitzchak. Excuse me for saying. I'll be honest with you. It's much easier being a Haredi Jew. Because you're in your own world doing your own things. You don't have any challenges ever. We have the challenges. We're the ones who are being Mekadosh Hashem. Stop making fun of them. We're the ones who have this constant challenge of people seeing that, wow, this guy's different. I told the story before. I'll tell the story again because it's such a powerful story. There was a guy who was in the business world and he was doing a deal with a Japanese company. And he was one of the heads of the deal. And they all knew that if they got this deal with this Japanese company, the company's made and he's going to be made himself because it was huge. And then they're negotiating, they come from Japan, Monday, Tuesday, they can't close the deal. And being a good Jew, he's like, this cannot last till Friday, because if it does, I'm dead. Friday's the worst day. And of course, it lasts till Friday. And they're going back and forth, and he's looking at his watch now. It's like, shoot. The train, you know, the last train. He always takes the second to last train, so he has a little time. He missed that train. And he's like, oh, struggling. He's like, okay, I'll miss the train. I'll take an Uber. And now this is it. This is the time that if he's lucky, he's going to get in the Uber. And if the Uber's not 7 minutes, you know, he's going to get there just a shkia. So he says to them, excuse me, I have to apologize. I am an Orthodox Jew. They don't know what an Orthodox Jew is. I am an Orthodox Jew. I have a Sabbath in an hour from now. I need to get home before the sun sets. It is a non-negotiable element of my religion. I apologize. And they all nod their heads, you know? And as he walks out, his boss grabs him and whispers to him, if you leave now, do not come back on Monday. We will lose the deal. I need you, man. He says, nothing to do. He leaves and goes home knowing that not only has he lost a deal of a lifetime, he's lost a job. It's a horrible, right? And you think his wife is going to care? He comes home 30 seconds before Shabbos. His wife wants to kill him because he didn't set the Shabbos clock. It's a terrible Shabbos. And when Shabbos is over, he goes to his phone and there's like 47 missed calls from his boss. And he's like, the last thing I want to hear about Motzei Shabbos is my boss tell me how I lost a deal. I don't want to hear it. And there were like 47 messages. So call me. You got to call me. He doesn't know why he decides to call. The boss says, I love you. I'm telling you right now, you're now a vice president. He's like, what are you talking about? He says, you left, and it was a very weird moment. They were trying to like figure out what just happened. And they said, we know we've been negotiating for almost a week. We're signing the deal right now. It's like, what? He said, if you have an employee who cares more about his lifestyle, his religion, than this job, that's the company you want to deal with. Talk about a walking Kiddush Hashem. And this guy's like, yeah, I knew that would happen. That's an amazing story. Because that's who we have to represent. Now, Shabbos, I'm sure nobody here would... Nobody's going to eat a cheeseburger. Right? You're not going to do any of those things. But then other things that we like to, you know... justify and say, well, it's only a bar, and you can't tell me that drink is, I'm sure it's kosher. I went with my wife once to another country, went to Mexico, like the only time we did like a real trip. Acapulco was a beautiful time, and part of the deal that we got was you got a voucher for like $100 of free drinks. This was an interesting hotel called Las Brisas. There wasn't a... Everybody, you had your own... One of the reasons why we got it, you had your own villa. And in your own villa, you had your own pool. It was amazing. So your own private place. And you walk down to... It's actually funny. You could call... There's no lobby. You can call to have a Jeep pick you up. You would walk most of the time. And you would see monkeys. We were real monkeys walking around. It was a little scary, but okay. And then every few... I don't know, every mile, there would be like a little side bar where you can get drinks. So my wife and I, Baruch Hashem, we're not drinkers. But I'm like, oh, at least you're... So my wife was saying, well, what drink can we get? She was right. We're in Mexico now. I don't know what the kashrus is of this. Some of the items were obvious, and you know that. And we knew that Coke was okay, and then Diet or whatever. And the funny part is, one of the things when you sit down with the drinks, so they give you a nice big bowl of nuts. And I was like, that for sure is trade. In the corner of my eye, I see the guy reloading the nuts. And I go, excuse me, I'm sorry. Can I see those nuts for a second? He picks them up, and they say on them, Kirkland. They're a Costco Star K. I was like, give me more nuts, baby, you know. But at the core, I don't care if it was on vacation. It wasn't kosher. I'm not saying it wasn't kosher. I don't know if it was kosher. I've heard guys tell me from this yeshiva, I'm going on vacation, we have Turks and Caicos, I'm going this and that. But don't worry, Rebbe, we're going to have kosher food because we're only eating fish, and all fish is kosher. I'm like, yeah, but all pots aren't kosher. Oh, oil isn't kosher, and all fish are not kosher, but what? A student once called me, frantic, the night before he was going to a trip with his parents. I said, first of all, I said, why are you calling me the night before? I can't do a lot of research. I don't know what's kosher, what's not kosher. And he says to me, I want to tell you, my parents are modern Orthodox, not just like regular modern Orthodox. The father davens three times a day. He said that we have looked into it, and we're only going to have the bread. All the bread's kosher, obviously, because all bread is kosher everywhere. What? No. Actually, there are countries who use lard for bread. They use lard as part of the ingredients of bread. That's not true. I happen to know, being in the catering business, I know actually bread that we've been told that lost the OU Hashkacha because they put non-kosher ingredients, non-kosher, real treif in it. So don't tell me that. When Entenmann's was going to lose their Hashkacha, it was because the company that runs them, called Bimbo, that's what it's called, from Mexico, was going to actually put lard in. So he was telling me all these things. I said, Yeah, the fruits, the vegetables, yeah, but the bread, who looked into the bread? We can't compromise on it. We don't compromise in Kiddush Hashem. I think that that's the essence of who we are and who we have to be. But instead of looking at other people, why don't we look at ourselves and say, well, will I be that person? We all will be challenged tremendously. Screamer. We all will be challenged tremendously with this challenge. But why do will they do it and look what they look like? I don't care what they do. What do you do? That's what I think the challenge is. Questions, comments? Yes. Should I, do you think I should stop or should I stop?
If you want to.
I don't know. I don't know what you're
going to. No, it's like a bad question.
Okay, go ahead. But, I just can't answer it. Go.
Regarding the sitting on a bus next to him in the story of
Yeah. Someone's
on the world, yeah. World being respectful, is there a line between Kiddush Hashem and Maris Ayin of like, oh, look, this religious guy sitting next to a woman?
Meaning, let's assume that's not a halacha. Right. So what's the Maris Ayin? Because it looks like I'm doing something wrong?
I'm saying there's it's just society, there's a stigma or whatever it is about, this guy, I thought that Jews don't sit next to women. Why is this religious guy wearing
right. So we on the trip that I was on, we had this very interesting talk. Ask us anything, especially the things you think Jews do that they don't really do. Meaning, that's always a misconception. Right, where they say, "Oh, I thought you're not allowed to." I just gave you a funny story. It's really funny. My wife is a physical therapist, and she used to be the physical therapist for the children of Lawrence Frank, who's now the big guy now, right? He's the what is he the Clippers? You heard of the Clippers?
Yeah.
So he's the GM of the Clippers. He was the coach of the Nets for many years. So. My son, little Yaakov, whose birthday was yesterday, he's 21, the army guy, he loved the Nets. And now, my wife's work, the coach, he can't get, so my wife's saying, I don't want to ask for tickets, not nice. Why would they have offered, they never offered tickets. I'm not going to ask for tickets. So finally, it was Hanukkah time. I said, Serena, you've been working there, you got to ask for tickets, it's ridiculous. So she's asked the wife, so, Hanukkah's coming, my son loves the Nets, and is there any possibility maybe you can get us tickets? She's like, that's so funny you asked that. I've always wanted to offer you tickets, but I can't because you understand most of the games are always after sundown. And we can't. And she's like, what? She thought Shabbos was every night at sundown. And therefore, she didn't want to be offensive and offer us. Imagine she said, oh, I have tickets for you only for Friday night. Ha ha, you can't go. Right? So there are certain times where you're like, no, I want to dispel what's going on, but you're correct. Maris Ayin is exactly that. There's a big raid now in everywhere, but in America especially, where all these fake things are coming up, right? All of these new foods that are, you're right there? All these new foods that are, beyond beef and all these things. Right. Right. So you have all this whole controversy. And we have, for example, if we're OU, which we are, so we have to write, we're not allowed to write, we have to write fake and bacon burger. You have to, you can't write it's bacon, and we have to write pyre of cheese, right? So I don't understand this, Sugya. I gave a shiur on it. Maybe we could give it another time on my resign, because it's obvious to everyone today. I think most normal people, but right, there are certain Jews who will see you eating a cheeseburger and being like, "I didn't know that was allowed. That's allowed." I have my famous my resign story where I violated my resign, where we were serving pizza at an event. And they said, how are you going to serve the pizza? You need to put it in a box. We didn't have pizza boxes. So the chef says to me, can you go out to a pizza store quickly? We're in the middle of nowhere. So I went to a local pizza store, not thinking. I'm wearing my yarmulke. And I walked out with 50 boxes of pizza that were empty. Yeah, but they were, they were just boxes. And I'm like, this looks terrible. Well, I needed some Jew to pass. I didn't know that place was kosher. Look at this guy. And how is he holding 50 boxes in the air? Wow. There's nothing in it. But okay. So yes, Maris Ayin is. It's a good question. I think it's wonderful when someone also wants to have chum. Meaning, there's, again, here, let's take the case that you said. There's nothing wrong with not wanting to sit next to a woman. I don't want to ever sit next to a woman on a plane. 100%. Not because of my wife. My wife, I'll sit next to her if I have to. No, but that's okay. But I don't want to sit next to a woman on the plane. I don't. Absolutely not. Because inadvertently, you will touch them. And I understand the charedim 1,000,000,000%. Why would you want to inadvertently touch someone? What's wrong with you? Rav Moshe Feinstein has a famous tshuva about the subway. And he says, you have no choice. What are you going to do? You get on the subway at 8 o'clock in the morning, the E-train. I'm sorry, but that's what happens. People have to push against each other. But it's not the way that it should be. If you can avoid it, great, avoid it. I understand that. But does it mean, in your case, I'm allowed to stand? Can I stand? Should I stand? Do I have to stand? It's a good question. Something you have to ask yourself. Rav Moshe at the end of his tshuva writes, what if I'm 18 years old and I have tivus and all I think about is girls and this girl sits next to me and I'm like, oh my God. Maybe she'll, if I mistake it. Then you got to get up from the seat then. That's halacha. So I don't know if we have to be machmir because, again, that's the shiloh by Kiddush Hashem. I know what I'm doing is right now, but by me screaming at the cashier, rightfully so, not screaming, whatever, telling her, maybe I shouldn't say anything because it's going to be a chil. Why is that? It's a good question. A lot of the rabbeim that I asked this question, they said, that's not a chil Hashem. Right? We do say certain times by marasayin, excuse me for the term, but because someone's stupid, that's not marasayin. Right? Because there's a guy who always looks at the negative. He says, oh, Hartzin for sure is there. Oh, Hartzin, as a joke, right? Just Baruch Hashem was zoichet to have a new car. The first person who saw me the new car said to me, that's so interesting. You just became the Vad Bayit. You know, the head of the block, whatever. And now you got a new car. I wonder where you got the money from. Right? Like it's a joke, right? So, but, because I'm not allowed to get a car because it just turned timing. Come on, stop. So I don't know. I don't know how far you have to go. Yeah. It's very, very difficult. Yeah, the sugya is difficult because how does it go? It's the nature of the person. It's true. We should be Don Lakovsko. You're right. But there are certain times. Again, we have crazy stuff. Like the Kohen himself couldn't have pockets. Shemo, if he gets rich, people are going to say like, yeah, because he probably steals stuff. Wouldn't wear his tefillin because maybe he put diamonds in his, maybe he took stuff out of the Beis HaMikdash. That's how machmir we were. The Kohen?
You know
what? When he was doing the service, he wasn't allowed to because Shemo he would have it. He wasn't allowed to wear this. He wasn't allowed to wear that. What? Yeah, Dan Lachaschut, of course we have to. We should be. Yeah, look, I've told you this before, but the same person you see doing a Chil Hashem, if that same person doing the Chil Hashem, you knew for sure who his parents were and what the situation was. His father sitting in jail, his mother has psychological problems, you'd be like, what do you expect? That's Dan Lachaschut. You're like, not in a bad way. Or the person has special needs. And you're like, I can't believe that person's acting that way. What's wrong with them? They're like, he's a Yachad kid. They're like, oh, sorry. So you're right. Dan Lachaschut means we should look at everybody saying, they weren't brought up. I'm lucky. I have amazing parents. They brought me up amazing. I know better. They don't know better. How does that person not say thank you? A chutzpah. The answer is the parents obviously didn't teach them what thank you means, how important it is. Any other questions? We have a few more minutes. One or two? Yeah.
So what do you, how do you view, things that they may do that would affect other people, their views or, affects, other types of Jews?
Correct. So it's, the difficulty I had this discussion with Rav Mendel, who was our lone Chabad emissary who came on this trip, who's doing an amazing job in Suffolk County, Long Island. And he got somebody who spoke to him, an important guy in this organization, said to him, I wish all the Hasidim were like Chabad. Can you imagine and he meant this, he's not a religious guy, and he said, can you imagine if the credo of every single Hasidus, from Ger to Satmar to Bells to whatever, was all that you have to do, bring people back into the religion who are not from? Do you have any idea how Eretz Yisrael would look at it? So Mendel can only speak for Chabad. He's like, you're right. You're right. It almost doesn't make sense. So the answer he gave was that there was a decision made which the Rebbe received a lot of flack for. And for that reason, even today, is considered to be, well, that's not really Hasidus. People say about Breslov and Chabad, well, that's a different Hasidus. Because at some point they decided, and I'm not going to blame the Holocaust on this because they were before the Holocaust like this, but definitely after the Holocaust especially. We have a term that we say every single morning, Hivdilano Minatoyim. We have to separate ourselves from the other nations, but they took this to the extreme. we know that we're really supposed to be Makaira people, but I can't work on that right now. Right? And again, I'm gonna turn the tables to you. Right? Not you specifically, but you're here. Can you please explain to me why every Shabbos you don't have a million people at your table and doing kiruv? Why don't you? You blame the Hasidim? You don't do kiruv yourself, you liar. You know what I think? Talking about myself. Oh, I had seminary girls this week. Wow, that was hard for me. That was hard, Hachnasas Orachim. And I did try to be Makari of them to not become Haredi because they're going on that path, that seminary path of like, you know. But in all seriousness, you're correct. They made a decision that we want to be alone. Now, it doesn't work out well because being... there was an article that written... It was in a... I thought it was in the New York Times. I must be wrong about this. Where one of the Satmar Rebbes wrote about the mistakes of my fellow Hasidim, about Eretz Yisrael. We know that Satmar has a rule, a steadfast rule, that they will not accept money from the Medina. Now that's a pretty harsh rule because you can get a lot of money from the Medina. They get a lot of support. Rav Nassim Finkel once said, the number one supporter of our yeshiva is not Mr. So-and-so, it's Mr. Medina Yisrael. They're the number one supporter of the Mir Yeshiva, one of the largest yeshivas in the world. So he writes that the Hasidish, they're not consistent with who they are. He says, you can't protest this, that, and the other if you're taking money from the government. You're not going to pay taxes, but you're going to take money. Doesn't make sense, he writes. Be like us. We won't vote in the elections. We don't want to be part of the Medina Israel. I'm sorry to say this, and I don't mean this tongue-in-cheek. I mean it seriously. I have respect for that. You're being a consistent Jew, and you're saying to me, I don't believe in Medina Israel, and therefore I'm not taking any money from them. I'm not serving in government. I'm not trying to... Okay, I get you. But are you allowed to have it both ways? Say, I want all the money from the Medina. I want to protest whenever I want. I'm not going to follow any rules. My kids are not going to serve in the army. We're not going to do any form of any service towards the... I get why you would be upset with that. So I don't have an answer except for the truth, which is they made a decision not to work on Kiruv and to just be themselves. And they would love to have their own buses. They would love to. They don't want to be. It's not like they want to be with us. They don't want to shop in Tel Aviv. That's not them. And the ones that do, by the way, are respectful because they know where they are, and they can't get away with the stuff they get away with. But if you're coming to, they don't want you shopping in bed. You think they want you in bed? They don't want you in bed. You now want to come here? Okay, now you have to serve me. It doesn't bother me so much. By the way, there used to be a thing. I remember people went crazy. I think there used to be a supermarket and they used to give out like skirts to the women to come in there. This is disgusting. But on the other hand, like, you're going into Meir Sharim, I understand it's part of Medina Yisrael, but be respectful. They don't like the way that you're dressed. I wouldn't be very happy if on Shabbos a woman was going up and down my street wearing a bikini. I would have a serious problem with that. I'm a fanatic? I don't think so. Okay, so let's just summarize where we've gone. I think it was productive, I hope. I think that we have to look at ourselves. Rav Aaron Soloveitchik said that, you know, Akedas Yitzchak teaches us something very important, as the Rambam says. There are many more halachas about how we live al Kiddush Hashem than how we die al Kiddush Hashem. We should be zeicha that we don't have to do that, but we have to live al Kiddush Hashem, and that's the hardest thing that we can do in our lives. And we should be zeicha to living our lives al Kiddush Hashem, and maybe not looking at other people and making fun of, looking at ourselves and saying, well, how do I react? How am I, whatever I want to call myself, modern Orthodox, Tatilumi, whatever you call yourself, how do I react to these things? Who am I going to be? That's the ultimate. And that's what we have to work on instead of looking at other people.